Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Kraken's Prize by Luna Gioia. Narrated by Jack Callahan and Kit Swan. 1. Seb. I really shouldn't murder the 7 other brethren of the Pirate Fellowship. Perhaps a member or two might not be missed, but killing the entire ruling body that I preside over? It would create complications. Callum, my second in command, cuts the feed to the virtual meeting, and the screens go dark.
"You can't wipe them all out, Seb," he says,
while he's simply reminding me of a truth I already know. It doesn't stop the urge to solve this problem the old-fashioned way, through bloodshed. Irritation has my skin going too tight, and I need to be in the ocean, swimming alongside the ship. While my quarters overlook the waves, the meeting left me feeling as trapped as ever. When did pirates become politicians? Knocking back the last of the rum, I let the spices play over my tongue and burn down my throat.
"About the same time the Fellowship voted a Kraken to be their king."
A title I would have refused if it wouldn't have left our crew at a disadvantage. I rip off the silver and gold rings that mean power and wealth among our kind and toss them to the table with a clink. Kings are pointless when piracy runs on democracy. Anyway, I should have made you handle today's diplomacy bullshit. Callum has been elected to his quartermaster post by the Marauder's crew for the past century. Everyone loves him, despite him bossing them around. He laughs a booming bark, not surprising, given his other forms a waterhound.
"The Fellowship would have never accepted anyone but their king to figure out how to handle Prince Faden."
"There's no handling Faden. He's a tyrant who wouldn't understand our system of electing leaders. You can bet he's already looking for his next realm to conquer."
"The Fellowship knows it. That's why they expect you to lead the discussion, regardless of how many times you threaten to drag their families to their doom if they dare enter your oceans, or that you suggested a blood sacrifice at a dimensional portal if they didn't shut up about the other realms."
"I'm too old for their bullshit. After wasting the last hour stuck behind a desk, I can't ignore my joints creaking as loud as the main mast when we hit our fastest sailing speeds. If the tech thieves want to take on the Triton militaries and their magical weapons, they can be my fucking guest. I won't risk facing Faden unless it's to plunder the ultimate prize."
The ultimate prize? Love," Callum drawls.
I scoff, and my tentacles, which might be said to mimic a human's hair and beard, writhe in annoyance. "Hardly. Love doesn't exist."
"Oh, come on, Captain. Don't you believe in fated mates?"
"Those only exist in fairy tales and legends."
"Same as Krakens, Waterhounds, and the rest of our crew," he says with a grin.
"During our toughest attacks, the man could be covered in blood and gore, and still the bastard would smile." "You're as ridiculous as the Fellowship." I push out of the captain's quarters to head topside, and he follows.
"Then what prize would be worth facing the Tritons?" he asks. "Taking the heart of the Sea Witch so we can break our curse?"
I don't stop on the stairs. "That bitch having a heart is the biggest fairy tale lie of all. If she had one, she wouldn't have cursed our crew 20-something years ago." "So we can never leave our ship, the ocean, or the floating home enchanted to hide us. She banished us from the shore and stole the glamour that let me walk among humans. No one with a heart could have done that."
"You don't like the land anyway," he argues.
"I don't hate it as much as being forced to go to the Fellowship for the food we eat or to sell the goods we steal. Before the curse, we had independence. When I find that damned witch again, I'll tear out her heart. Even if it doesn't break her curse, I'll have my revenge.
Love and revenge! Rock!
Petey the parrot flaps his wings to settle on Callum's shoulder.
Love and revenge!
I let my annoyance at Petey's ramblings roll off me. Honestly, I didn't mind Petey when he stayed in human form. He played a decent hand of poker, made a mean minestrone, and always knew the best gossip. But he wandered ashore, despite the curse, and returned stuck as a parrot. We've endured his shedding feathers and constant chatter for years as visible proof of what fate awaited us all if we dare test the witch's curse. Not that some of the crew needed more of a reminder when they'd been separated from those who couldn't, or wouldn't, follow us to our protected home. Families had been torn apart, loved ones left behind. On the deck, the wind whips around us, and waves crash against the bow in a comforting rhythm. The Fellowship and the Sea Witch have my blood pressure rocketing, but the saltwater air soothes. I take a deep breath, filling my lungs with the scent. Stripping off my boots, I let them fall to the wooden slats with a thunk.
Tell our bosun to stop fixing the damn tech, or at least let the comms fail the next time the Fellowship wants to chat.
If I tell Reuben not to magic the tech, then the crew loses television privileges, which might bring on mutiny. So perhaps we find a different way to avoid the Fellowship, Callum suggests. Captain, overhead.
I glance into the sky as our sailing master, Emily, circles above in her albatross form. On a ship full of shapeshifters, I'm the only true monster. Without the Sea Witch's curse, my crew could go ashore somewhere other than what they call Castle Kraken. My crew wouldn't have lost contact with those on shore who couldn't come with us to the castle. If only the witch had focused her wrath on me instead of taking it out on us all. If only she hadn't doomed us to stay afloat or in monstrous form for the rest of eternity. If only I hadn't given the order to attack the single ship that had been our demise. Emily lands on the deck and shifts to her two-legged form.
There's a merman about 50 miles from here, heading north and moving fast. His cloaking magic's good, but not good enough. If he's a spy for Faden?
She trails off with a knowing smirk, as though waiting for me to figure out, yet again, she's the smartest member of the crew. Then that begs the question, what's a spy for Faden doing in this realm, I ask her, and what's he after?
Might be worth finding out, she says.
Callum interrupts her fun.
The captain just told the Fellowship not to pick a fight with Faden and the Tritons.
It wouldn't be a fight, I clarify. We're simply investigating a possible threat to our territory. Because the oceans in this realm are mine. Excellent work, Emily. Chart a course after that merman.
Modern motors or full sails, Captain?
She asks. I miss the snap of sails, the ripple of cloth, the gleeful whoops of the howler triplets when the three brothers climb the rigging or scale the mast. Ghost ship protocol, I tell her. Shaking his head, Callum calls orders to the crew to weigh anchor and get underway, taking my hat and clothes from me as fast as I strip out of them. I dive into the ocean below, shifting as I plunge, releasing tentacles and angling to arc the entry so the ship stays upright despite my enormous true form. I stop thinking of the Fellowship, Faden's extensive Triton military, or anything except whatever prize might await us if I play the chase of this merman right. Bitterness that I led my crew into this curse? It still claws at me. I'm not the kind of kraken who can let an injustice against them slide. But until I can take the Sea Witch's heart to reverse our fate, I'll settle for us stealing Triton's treasure.
2. Ava. A massive hologram of a ghost ship floats across our apartment's kitchen floor, its tattered sails and black flag fluttering in an invisible breeze. Drawn to it, as if it's calling me with a siren's song, I move closer to make out the lettering on its side. The M-A-R. The image blinks out of existence. The Maritime? The Marvelous? The Mariachi? No, those don't sound right. I make a note in my planner for the upcoming summer internship at my dad's company to ask for the ship's name, since it's not yet listed in any catalog. Fiddling with the knobs, I push buttons according to the directions printed in teeny tiny font in the instruction pamphlet. If I got the hologram projector to work once, I can do it again.
Do I smell coffee?
Val stumbles from her bedroom into our kitchen. Left your cappuccino on the counter, I answer, still twisting and pressing the impossible number of controls on the projector that should be easy to operate according to the 2-point font.
You're the best roommate ever.
She takes a long sip and sighs.
I know I was jonesing for a caffeine fix, but did I hallucinate? I could have sworn I saw a phantom pirate ship in here.
It's the latest party decoration from my dad's company, not even on the market yet, which is good since they haven't worked out the kinks.
I hold two of the buttons at the same time, trying to mimic the impossible diagram that seems to require three hands.
The internship director asked me to test it, since they plan to debut it at the international trade shows I'll be working this summer.
Have the internship people figured out yet that you're the boss's daughter since you lied about your name on the application?
I cringe. It wasn't a complete lie. I used my first and middle names.
You rule breaker, you,
she says with a laugh, as though I'm the farthest from an actual rule breaker. Yeah, I'm the boring one out of our friend group. I wanted to get the job based on what I can offer, not whose kid I am. She walks toward where I sit on the living room couch. Except Val doesn't bother with normal walking. No, she does this hip roll with swagger that would make me look like a pigeon-toed clown if I tried. But she makes it work so well that it's discussed in celebrity gossip sites as her signature stroll.
You're going to rock this internship and travel the world so everyone can see your awesomeness.
That's my plan. Traveling the world has been my dream since I was little.
Val picks up a metal ruler from the top shelf of the library cart I use to organize my office supplies, or at least the ones I keep in this room, and waves me away with a flick of her hand. Stop playing with the pirates for a second.
She smacks the projector with a thwack, and it fires to life again.
Voila.
The pirate ship sails in waves of light across our kitchen, rippling over the cabinets and catching on a side table and a stack of envelopes I labeled earlier. Or I must have. I don't remember writing those labels. Welcome to life with traumatic brain injury. Every brain injury is unique in the absolute worst ways. Mine comes with memory deficits. It's always the short-term stuff that trips me up. Remembering my three best friends' names? Easy peasy. Remembering an appointment or what I had for lunch yesterday? So much harder. While I don't remember writing those bold letters on the envelopes, the black markers in my handwriting, so is the cursive on the pink sticky reading, "Leave for Haunted House with a time that's..." I glance at the clock. Oh no, 20 minutes from now. My heart sinks. Crap, I almost forgot the haunted house. I jump to my feet, knocking over the projector, and the pirate ship fizzles out. We're going to be late. Val shakes her head and puts a hand on my arm.
It's all good. Now that I have this, she lifts her cappuccino. I'll be ready on time.
I'll fix food we can take.
As if you would forget food. You made enough to feed a small army instead of the four of us. It's prepped and labeled in the fridge. Did you get any sleep?
My
my memory's worse when I'm tired. Not much. Or any. I was too excited about all the cities I'll see with my new internship, on top of the other freelancing opportunities waiting for me, if I can just figure out the real story behind this haunted house attraction we're visiting today. I can't believe I almost missed my shot at a reporting gig. Doubt sends a sickly spiral through my belly. Any news agency would be crazy not to hire you to dig into celebrity and entertainment scandals, since your mom's the most connected woman in Hollywood. As if anyone could out-Hollywood your mom. While my mom's the fiercest entertainment attorney in the country, if not the world, Val's family stars in a reality show. They own red carpets whenever they arrive at premiere parties. Something's off about this haunted house, and I intend to find out what. If I can, I'll have my internship and freelance fun, too. Better than a double scoop of ice cream. Well, maybe not. I do love a good Rocky Road ice cream with caramel topping. At this rate, you'll take over the world before law school. Ugh, law school. I would rather travel the world telling stories and reporting events, but my parents argue law school's the smarter option, the safer option. And with their trauma left over from my accident, I haven't been able to find the right way to explain my decision yet. If I can show them my success this summer, maybe I won't be in law school come fall. Val shoots me a go-get-em look over her cappuccino when our doorbell rings.
Who didn't get the memo that we're out today?
She checks the window next to the door. Oh, look, it's your Captain Cardboard. Why is he here? I scurry to stare out the window with her. My boyfriend of the past 4 months, no, 5 or maybe 6, stands outside. His perfectly preppy hair has not a strand out of place, and he looks like he walked out of an ad for country club fashion. I'm sure he stopped by to wish us a great trip.
Uh-huh, sure.
Val opens the door.
What's up, JP?
It's JT.
He curls his lip.
And you know it.
At least she didn't call him Captain Cardboard to his face.
I'll be ready to go in 15,
Val promises me.
We don't want to keep Meg and Rosemarie waiting for our trip.
She stalks away with a judgy side eye tossed at JT. This is a surprise, I tell him, waving him into the living room. I didn't think we had plans this morning. Unless I forgot. Oh, God, did I schedule something with him and forget?
You haven't consulted your many calendars yet?
His sneer makes me want to shrink into someone smaller. I can't help the problems that come with a brain injury that probably should have killed me. Sure, I have issues with my memory and balance, and I still have headaches and scars. But I work hard to come up with systems and solutions to minimize and mask as best I can. Did we have a coffee date? We haven't seen each other in weeks, other than graduation parties and group events. College finals and family obligations got in the way for both of us. Plus, his fraternity takes up a lot of his time.
Not that you would remember if we did.
He walks past me and rummages through the office supplies in my library cart. Each time he sweeps his hand across the carefully arranged stacks, a pen or a roll of washi tape rolls out. What are you doing? I hate mess. He knows that. Everything has its place, or I'll forget where to find it.
Where'd you put the stuff for that trip to the resort my family gave us?
The trip his mom and dad bought us for college graduation to impress my parents? The one my parents don't want me to go on? I put my hand over his and pull the painstakingly organized envelope of travel details, plane charter arrangements, gift certificates, and more from the planner, with an airplane embossed on the front, my soon-to-be travel journal. It's all here. He takes it from me. Do you need me to make more itinerary changes? I ask, since he's already insisted on rearranging most of the schedule.
Your folks said you can't go.
At first they did, but...
So I'm taking my frat brothers instead.
What? I've already blocked the dates, arranged the time with the internship coordinator, bought clothes for the trip, and packed. I have sticky notes for everything and multiple copies of the detailed itinerary. We leave tomorrow night.
You're not coming with me. I want that job with your mother's firm, and you going would risk pissing her off. You'd hate the place anyway. You'll whine about the altitude.
I won't. I make sure not to complain about anything around him.
Listen, Avocado.
I hate when he calls me that. But I say nothing because he'll spin it into the many reasons he sees it as okay, despite my not liking it. Yes?
Our senior year has been amazing. And I can't wait to work for your mom through law school.
He trails off, the unspoken but as loud as if he'd screamed it into the silence that's broken only by the ticking second hand of a clock that reminds me that I'm scheduled to be leaving soon. I need to finish getting ready, pack the food in a cooler, and text Meg and Rosemary that Val and I are on our way. Yet I can't do any of that with JP. Dang it, now Val has me thinking it. I mean, JT here. I'd wished earlier in our relationship that I could label him as easily as things in my planner. A sticker with JT would have made our first few dates so much smoother. I know.
And my parents count on their contracts with your dad's company, which is why I need you to be cool about this.
I blink. About not going on the trip that they gave us? Us, not him. His mother specifically handed the packet to me and said she'd bought this with my love of adventure in mind. She'd mentioned what a godsend I'd been for keeping her youngest in line.
About the trip. And the fact that I don't think this will work anymore.
I go still. What won't work?
Us.
He won't make eye contact. Oh, no. He's not leaving me to agonize the next few days wondering what he meant. Are you breaking up with me?
We had a decent run, but you're... you.
He gestures from my face to my feet. I cringe. Yeah, I have body image issues. I get constant unwanted opinions about being too skinny, about how to correct my natural shape, and about eating disorders I don't have. When I'd gotten a gift membership to the local gym, I lifted huge amounts of weights for months and gained not an ounce of muscle. But any man who dated me chose me for who I am, right? What does that mean? I managed to ask.
You put the frost in Ava Frost.
He thinks I'm frigid? I've heard this before. At college, in high school from the rich boys who ruled the prep school Val and I attended. You were the one who said we should take things slow. You said you loved me and that you wanted to wait.
My family loves you. They adore you.
He dodges the point so effectively that I might have missed it if I hadn't grown up with a world-class litigator. Your family does, but not you. I told myself that he needed time, that I shouldn't waste years dreaming to have the same kind of fairy tale love that my parents have for each other. Just go, JT.
You'll still put a good word for me in with your mom.
And there's the truth of why he was with me. Please go. I can't do this another moment. The door closes behind him. Goodbye, Captain Cardboard. My friends warned me about him being a social climber with an agenda. They'd claimed he wanted my connections more than me, and I'd defended him as being busy with school or worried about law school. He never wanted me. He wanted what I could do for him. What's worse? I'm not shattered by this breakup. If either of my parents spend more than a night apart, it's a huge deal. I want their kind of love. Not in the weird way that would require more therapy, but that all-consuming, overwhelming love. Putting together essentials for our trip and checking each task off a list, I'm not surprised when Val's a few minutes late. He dumped me, I tell her.
That asshole.
She hugs me from behind.
We'll say you dumped him. I'm your witness.
That's Val. Ever the spin queen and the most loyal bestie I could have asked for. Let's get on the road before anything else can go wrong. Less than 3 miles away, I realize I should have bitten my tongue. We haven't made it to Meg or Rosemarie before my phone lights with Mom across the screen. Val glances my way.
Don't do it, she says.
If I don't answer, she'll just keep calling. I force a smile because my mother freaks out if she senses something off. Hi, Mom. How are...
She doesn't bother with pleasantries. Ava, with your brain injury and memory issues, you know you aren't able to travel, especially not internationally. While your father and I don't approve of you going away with that boyfriend of yours, we compromised since the mountain resort has an impeccable reputation.
If words could toss lightning bolts, my mom would pop them off with deadly precision when she is using her coming-in-like-a-hurricane lawyer voice.
But an internship going from country to country? Absolutely not.
How did she find out about my position with Dad's company?
I earned that internship on my own, without using the family name. Despite the family name.
You always say to go after my dreams.
I don't mean dreams that might threaten your health. Not to worry, I've already called the internship director to sort everything out.
My heart beats faster, and my skin goes hot. What? My voice comes out tight and small. Please tell me she didn't.
We'll find you a nice, safe position with my firm this summer. The better to prep for law school.
Mom!
Gotta go, sweetheart. I have a deposition to defend. We'll talk about your summer position here when you get back. Love you.
She hangs up without another word. I stare at the phone.
What is it?
Val asks. My mom got me fired from my dad's company.
What? That's ridiculous.
I crank up the air conditioning, aiming the vents at my face, but it's no use. Goodbye to my plans of traveling. Farewell to the destinations I'd mapped and repeated 1,000 times in my mind. From the trade shows across Europe to the expo in Tokyo. A deeper pang aches in my heart. She said I'm not able to travel. My voice goes flat, the words ringing hollow. Because of the TBI. Will the traumatic brain injury forever be the only thing my parents see when they look at me? I love them, but these days it feels like they tug me beneath waves to drown. They'll never realize I'm not that kid in the coma anymore.
What do you want?
Val sounds as if she's speaking from far away because my pulse is so loud in my ears. This had been my chance to show my parents that I'm not defined by my brain injury. That my life didn't end with the accident that killed others.
If one door closes, pick the lock.
It's one of my dad's many mantras. I'll find another way, I say. If I can expose whatever this Underworld Incorporated is up to with the haunted house, the traveling reporter gig's as good as mine.
Then we'll get you whatever dirt you need to score that job.
She parks in front of Meg's apartment.
You can't tell Meg. She's already freaking out about a haunted house as much as Rosemarie's excited about running into some ghosts. I think she's hoping to contact her great-grandmother.
Poor Rosemarie. She's had the worst year.
We'll make it the best. For all of us,
Val says, as Meg heads in our direction along the driveway to her apartment complex.
Give me a sign at the house and I'll take care of the rest. You'll have your
Sample complete. Ready to continue?